We're in Joshua 5 today. Just going to read three verses today. I worked in local government for 24 years, and the Lord changed my heart, led me out of that and into vocational ministry. And part of that change was that I just became very discouraged about government. It seemed to me that we spent a majority of our resources on being government rather than on the mission. Maybe I just became too sensitive to it. And I suppose I still get angry about it when I see the political mess we're in these days in our state and national governments especially. And it just makes me think about how we do church, what we do here as an organization. And I want to make sure that we're using our resources to help people know Jesus, to help people become lifelong disciples of Jesus, not just promoting a program or an institution or build an empire. I just don't want that to be our legacy. And as we look here at what was going on with Israel, we see that they had to make some major changes. They had to let go of some old things in order to receive some new things, new and better things. And I just ask myself, are we ready to make those kinds of changes? And are we spending our resources rightly? And of course, we're talking about building a building, and we've been adding staff. And so, it's on my mind. Are we using our resources rightly to help people know Jesus? Let us strive to be faithful to the Lord and His mission. So we're going to look at what was going on with Israel. There was just a major change happening in the nation of Israel that we've been reading about here in the first early chapters of Joshua. And the central event so far, of course, is the crossing of the Jordan River. Like God did at the Red Sea, He parted the waters. He dried up the riverbed so the whole nation could walk across into the promised land. And that happened on the 10th day of the first month by their lunar calendar. That action, that whole big event caused the other people in the land, the Ites, all those people groups in the land, caused them to fear God and to fear Israel. It says their hearts melted with fear and they lost courage to attack Israel. And it also caused, of course, Israel's faith to grow. How could it not? When you literally are part of a miracle that big, how could it not encourage your faith? Now, and then after the people crossed the river, they camped at Gilgal. And we talked about that last week. And the week prior, the word Gilgal comes from the word roll. And God told them there after that mass circumcision, I have rolled away the shame of your slavery in Egypt. I've renewed you as a nation. And then they had built the memorial there out of the stones that God told them, carry 12 big stones out of the river and build a memorial to this event, so that later on when you come by here, you can tell your kids, hey, this is what happened here at this place in the river. They, of course, had that circumcision, and all of the males in the camp in one day took the sign of the covenant, and that in itself was radical obedience and faith that they displayed in that event. And we're going to read today of another command to Israel at Gilgal. God told them to observe the Passover on the 14th day of the month, which was the time that God originally prescribed. And they had probably not practiced it very faithfully in the wilderness since they'd left Sinai anyway. So let's read about it. In Joshua chapter 5, beginning in verse 10, on the evening of the 14th day of the month, while camped at Gilgal on the plains of Jericho, the Israelites celebrated the Passover. The day after the Passover, that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened bread and roasted grain. The manna stopped the day after they ate this food from the land. And your translation may say the day of, or the day they ate this food from the land. There was no longer any manna for the Israelites, but that year they ate the produce of Canaan. So on the evening of the 14th day of the month, the first month of the Hebrew calendar, they observed Passover. The river crossing had happened on the 10th day. By the way, back in the Exodus story, in Exodus, that when the real Passover happened, 4 days earlier, God told Moses, on the 10th day, tell each family to pick out a lamb to be sacrificed and roasted on the 14th. The 10th day of the month, they did that. And here, on the 10th day of the month, they crossed the river. These things are not coincidental. It's just amazing what God was doing to build their memory of His salvation of Israel. And then they had built the stone memorial and had the mass circumcision and camped here at Gilgal, which is the very name reminds them that God has rolled away their shame. And that Gilgal was on the plains of Jericho. And it was on the flatter ground between Jericho up on a hill and the river down in the valley, and the plain in between is where they're camped. So they can see the city of their first conquest ahead, and the river is behind them. Now they're in the promised land. They're officially in the promised land. This celebrating the Passover was significant for a lot of reasons, I think. It of course remembers that original Passover in Egypt, that when the Lord sent the angel of death into Egypt on the 10th plague, and he took away every firstborn in Egypt except for those in Israel. And the angel of death passed over their houses, and the next day they walked out of Egypt freely. And God had told them to observe this every year. And here they are, officially celebrating the Passover in the promised land. The land that was promised to Abraham. That God said, I will provide this to your descendants. And here they are. They are receiving fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham. It's a big day. A big time. They'd come through the water. And you can even see that as a baptism coming through the river. Of course, they didn't get wet because God dried up the river, but they came through the water, so to speak. They had done this circumcision of all the males to consecrate the nation. They were clean and ready for God's service, officially in the promised land and in the will of the Lord. It was a new era for the nation of Israel. And then on the next day after Passover, they ate from the produce of the land flowing with milk and honey, the promised land. 40 years earlier, 12 Hebrew spies had gone into the land and brought back some of the produce, some of the fruit and the grain, and to prove how bountiful the land was. But 10 of those spies were afraid, and they led the people to be afraid. And so they rebelled against God, and they didn't go in and take the land. And they'd been wandering in the wilderness ever since, while that generation died off. And now this new generation has come into the land, and only two of those spies remained. Joshua and Caleb were the faithful two. And I hope you understand by now, I think you would have, that this wilderness experience, while absolutely real for Israel, also becomes a metaphor for our wilderness living. Sometimes we put ourselves out in the wilderness with sin, with living away from God. He doesn't want us out there in the wilderness, but sometimes we take ourselves out there and we don't enjoy the blessings of God because we're not living rightly with Him. We're rebelling against Him. We're running from Him. But now this nation was renewed. Israel was renewed. They tasted the produce of the land flowing with milk and honey. New provision. The produce was bountiful. And the first that they had here, it says, was grain. They had unleavened bread and roasted grain. It was unleavened. It didn't have yeast in it because it was part of the observation of the Passover and the feast of unleavened bread. So here we are experiencing new provision, but also being obedient to God's command. Now this generation had grown up eating manna and quail. The manna was fresh every morning. All they had to do is go outside the camp and get it and come back in and make their food. But it says the next day that was gone. And by the way, where did they get this grain to make bread? And where did they get that? They hadn't grown it. They had only just arrived. Israel had not had time to settle and establish fields and vineyards. Where did they get the produce? Who had tended those crops? Verse 12 says, the manna stopped the day after they ate the food from the land. Now, depending on your perspective, that was either a welcomed event, the stopping of the manna, or it was a frightening event. The manna stopped. Now, if you're prone to see the negatives first, that would be a bit frightening to lose the sure provision that you've known for 40 years. Years. 40 years. God's provided that every morning. And now it's gone. Is there going to be enough food? Will God be providing for us? Are we going to have enough to eat? Are we going to have to learn to farm again? And I try to think about how some things that we might feel about, are we sure we want to stop that? We've always had Sunday school before worship time on Sunday morning, right? Because that's how you do it, right? And because of COVID, we made this huge change, and for 45 minutes, it's different. We move the time 45 minutes. I wonder if there's a different plan. I didn't come here to tell you we're changing schedule. I'm just saying, what if? We've always had monthly business meetings. We've always been part of the Baptist General Convention of Texas. We give a tithe of our income to Southern Baptist causes. We have deacons, but we don't have elders. Again, I'm not telling you those are bad things. They're not. They're good things. It's why they've lasted. But what if we needed to change to get something better? Is what we're doing helping people become lifelong disciples of Jesus? That's the criteria. Are our ways the best for here and now? Or is God leading us to do something different? Again, I didn't bring any of those up because I have an agenda. I just was thinking about our traditions. And now, of course, for Israel, the bounty and the variety of the produce of this new land was rich and varied. And you optimists noticed that right away. Some of you are like, yes, no more manna. We get to eat some grapes and some grain And they did. There was a good supply. Here at their first campsite, they had enough to feed the nation, the whole nation. Even though the manna had stopped, they had enough grain and bread to eat. And now there would be no more restrictions on storing up food. You know, they were not allowed to store up any manna and quail, but here, those restrictions are gone. And this land is fertile and is capable of feeding the nation perpetually. God even set up this system called the Sabbath year and the Jubilee year to take care of the land and to teach the nation how to take care of the land so that it would always be productive. And if they had stayed with the plan, it would have worked marvelously. But they had to give up the daily provision of manna in order to receive the new. The people had to leave behind the familiar in order to take up new provision and new experience. I find that hard in my own life. Verse 12 says, "But that year they ate of the produce of Canaan." As Israel conquered nations and cities, they reaped a bountiful harvest of fruit and grain. In some of those places, they were allowed to keep the livestock. And for the next year and beyond, they ate well. And they didn't even farm. They gathered in what other people had produced. They reaped a harvest from what other people had sown. They collected all they needed from the fields and the vineyards and the stores of the Amorites and Canaanites. And for that year, they ate the produce of Canaan. Now, and we're not given a lot of details at this point, but I hope you can grasp the gravity of what was happening here in this nation. It was a new beginning for the entire nation. They were receiving the land that was promised to Abraham generations before. They were reaping an incredible harvest that other people had worked to produce. They were gaining possession of a land flowing with milk and honey, as was said. And when I was little, I used to think about what did a stream of milk and honey look like? Obviously, it was figuratively speaking. There was so much good in this land that it just felt like a river of milk and honey. Sort of like when the pilgrims came to the North America, I suppose. God told Israel, "If you follow my plan and you remain faithful to me, this land will always provide for you." They could live long and prosper in the land. But in order for Israel to experience this new provision and this new homeland, they had to give up some old ways and old methods. Not all of them. Here they were celebrating Passover, just like God had told them 40 years earlier. There are some things that need to be maintained, but they had to give up other things like the daily manna. And from this point forward in the book of Joshua, we'll be reading about the conquest of cities and kingdoms. It was quite brutal at times, especially as God told them they were to devote the entire people and most of their resources to the Lord. That means to destroy them. But God did exactly what he told them he would do. God went before them and defeated their enemies. And Tim's going to lead us next week and to see that first victory at Jericho as Joshua fought the battle at Jericho, as the old song goes. God is always faithful to do what he tells us. His methods amongst us might change, his calendar, his schedule might change, but he's always faithful. I want to conclude this morning briefly with four lessons the church can learn from the Gilgal experience, from this event as they were coming into the promised land and camped at Gilgal. First, we need to remember God's great works. just like he told them to build this stone memorial to remember what he had done there at the river, we need to remember God's great works. We need to remind ourselves. And that's part of the reason we read the Bible, to remind us of who God is and what he has done. And we also need to set up events and memorials to remember what God's done in our lives as well. We need to celebrate God's mercy, his provision, and his protection. And we need to pass those lessons on to our children and our grandchildren. And secondly, we need to observe the radical and faith-filled obedience of Israel at this point. Just like when all of the nation submitted to the consecration, the circumcision ceremony in one day, that's radical and faith-filled obedience. Crossing the river, submitting to that procedure, and as we're about to see, marching against their enemies, at least in this phase, they were obedient. Radical faith. And we need to be learned. We need to learn to be willing to follow the Lord that radically and that faithfully. We need to learn to walk in faith. Now, the third lesson, I think, from Gilgal is that we need to celebrate redemption. That's what the Passover was about, celebrating redemption. And here we are approaching Easter, and there's no better time to celebrate redemption than at Easter, right? We specifically remember his death and his resurrection on our behalf. We praise the Lord for his miraculous work that enables us to experience his grace and to receive his kingdom. Let us praise him well. I hope that you are preparing yourself for Easter. There is no more important holiday of the year for Christians. And fourthly, we need to remind ourselves that God's provision may change and his schedule may change, but God is always faithful. Every time. And we need to hold our plans and our programs loosely and watch the Lord keenly. We need to watch what God is doing and follow him, just like Israel did in crossing the river. And it's a grand adventure. It may require us to change how we do things or where we go. But the Lord's provision is always more than we could ask or imagine, because he is faithful. His provision may change, but God is always faithful. Let's pray.